on the road to no place left. This is Feeney, and I'm driving. We learn to share the gospel, make disciples, and reproduce leaders and churches until there is no place left where the name of Jesus hasn't been heard. This is season 4, where we're tackling all questions related to simple churches that can start among lost people for $0. I know I often put sports ministry into an outreach category in my mind, and I don't consider anything else God might do through it. Well, this interview with Roman in Houston was a great shot in the arm on how sports can be the entry field, as in field one of the four fields, and actually lead to sustaining autonomous churches. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. But yeah, Roman, I'd love to just start by asking you your story. But do you want to tell us kind of just a 2-minute backstory of yourself before we jump into the kind of the story of your current ministry?
Yeah. So I was born in a country called Uzbekistan, which I always say it's in the middle of the world, surrounded by all the stands. And my mom and my dad were both in ministry there, trying to reach people through sport, combining sport with Discovery Bible study and trying to plant underground churches, because Uzbekistan at that time was the 7th most persecuted country in the world. And so I grew up in the persecuted world, thinking that the only way to do church is underground and small and in people's homes. When I was about 10 years old, the persecution really scaled up. And growing up, my dad was in prison a lot, in jail. We never really understood if he'll come back tonight or not, because if he's kept overnight, he might be kept for however long they choose to keep him in jail. But at the same time, my parents, from an early age, from like the age of 5, they would show us movies like Schindler's List and World War II movies and tell us, this was probably happened to you guys. You will be left without your parents, but don't worry, God is with you. Finally, Uzbekistan had enough of my parents and the rest of our family, and they decided to kick us out of the country. They put in our passport that we're spiritual terrorists and said, well, you have 48 hours to leave the country. Thought that we would live somewhere around the stands or in Russia. The same thing happened. Nobody would accept us. And out of nowhere, the U.S. said, why don't you guys move here? I thought we were going to move to California. That's where the rest of my family lives. My dad's parents, uncles, aunts, everybody lives there. They moved there about 7 years before we moved to the U.S. But my dad and my mom both felt like God is calling them to Houston. We spoke no English. We didn't understand the banking system. It was completely new to us, and we knew one guy in Houston. And so that's how we ended up here. And it was a cultural shock for me, because that was the first time that I saw the mega church. And, there's so many ways to do church. It was a cultural shock. And it was a cultural shock to me to meet people my age, you know, in middle school, who come to church on Sundays, but then they don't live out that faith throughout the school week. It would be the same people that I go to church with that were now my classmates, yet they were so different. In Uzbekistan, if you accept Jesus is your Lord and Savior, you're basically signing off your rights to your life, you know? And so here it was like a total shock. And I was a little bit lost in that time of like, God, okay, I can just become a nominal Christian. That's awesome. Go to church on Sundays. And this is awesome. This is great. I didn't know Christianity can be so easy. That was kind of my story. And then I began translating a lot of disciple-making trainings, movement trainings, from English to Russian. I was doing the translation just to make extra money on the side. I wasn't interested in ministry, but I knew how to speak English and Russian. So I was like, all right, I'll translate and make money. And that's when God began to speak to my brother and I of, okay, how do we reach people here in Houston, our age specifically, teenagers and youth who are completely lost? And God led my brother and I. We grew up in north side of Houston because of the churches that began to support us when we moved here. So we grew up in a very affluent part of the city, but we then began going in prayer driving and prayer walking in some of the poorest areas of Houston, where majority of refugees live. And these refugees are not as blessed as we were. You know, we moved to great schools, to a great apartment, had great support system around us, but these people were just living in so much brokenness. And at the age of 18, God called both my brother and I to see disciple making movements happen among these youth, specifically teenagers and kids, because we think that they're the best vehicle to reach their parents because they speak English, but their parents are not speaking any of the language. And so we said, we want to do this through sport, play, and fitness because we thought it's an international language. At that time, my family, we would go to Galveston, which moving from Uzbekistan, Galveston, we thought was the best beach in the world. But if you know Galveston, if you've been to Galveston, it's by far the worst beach in the world. It's like on water, but we loved it. And so we would play soccer on the beach. And one of the times we had about 40 other people join us. We spoke different language. Different culture. Nobody spoke English, but we were all connected with the ball. And we said, okay, you know, how can we motivate the disciple makers in Houston to reach the nations that are living here without even having to travel? All these nations are already speaking English. What can we do? And so we started a tournament that we called Cup of Nations. And that was basically a World Cup event. So different nations that live in Houston represent each other, come and play the tournament. And then we invite people with a passion to make disciples, the passion for nations to come and try to build relationships, try to share the gospel, try to invite them to read scriptures together. And that kind of opened doors for us, for my brother and I, to really do this almost every single day, going to communities, playing soccer, identifying people of peace, beginning Discovery Bible studies with the hope of a church being birthed. So that's kind of my story.
That's awesome. There's a lot we could tease out there. I might circle back around at the end to the challenges of an American Christian culture versus outright persecution. That's a tangent probably worth taking. But I'm particularly right now trying to chase down stories of churches that have started basically out of ventures like you're talking about. So maybe that's the best way to ask it. Do you have a story of, from what you just described, just take us on this journey of a church coming out of that?
I'll share a few stories just because God has been doing awesome just things.
Great.
So at our soccer practices, we run all our soccer practices using 3/3 model. So we'll go into a neighborhood and the whole practice is divided and look back, look up, look forward. Because we want to, even though if a child or a teenager comes to a practice, we want them right away to get the DNA of a disciple from the very beginning, even if they don't really know who Jesus is, but all these questions we think build up the DNA the right way from the beginning. And so when people are warming up, we always ask, what are you thankful for? What is stressing you out? The needs of your community? And how can we serve your community, your friends, your family? How did you obey what we learned last week? And then we have a look up part. And so where we share the Bible story. And for example, our soccer practices always are connected. So if we're talking about soccer skill, then we'll connect it. So if we're talking about heading the ball, how to head the ball, we'll connect it to a life value of being courageous, because every time I head the ball, I'm going and I'm getting hit in the face and I might get elbowed and all this stuff. So you got to be courageous to go up in the air. And then we'll connect it to the story of David and Goliath, for example, or Apostle Paul, of how they've been courageous. And so that's how we run all of our practices. And at the end, we'll say, well, how are you going to obey which we've learned in our story? And then what skill, soccer skill, are you going to adapt that you're going to try to develop? And then with whom are you going to share? And so sometimes it's hard to work with teenagers and youth, and it's, you make 10 steps forward and then 35 steps back because they'll go to their public school where there's hundreds of temptations around them. And so a couple months ago, we were really low and kind of down that we're running basically Discovery Bible study on the field. And there are kids who are interested, but it feels like they cannot really say that we're a church. They are not self-identifying, even though we'll do the stories of what this is a church. And you can see that we're doing church on the field, but for them, it doesn't click because they see church as a building. They've seen them all over Houston. There's over 3,000 churches. So if we're not meeting in the building and having certain type of worship, then we're not a church. And so we just basically began telling them, instead of seeking their own self-identification, that we are a church, we are a church, we are a church. And we're going to meet as a church separately on Wednesday nights. So if you want to come and join us, please join us for church. What we're doing here is great. We're discovering who God is, who we are, and what his plan for us is. But if you really want to be discipled and if you want to grow as a believer and reach your community, then you need to be a part of the church. And so begin meeting with a few of them on Wednesday nights. about seven guys. And it's interesting that the seven guys that wanted to come and be a part of our house church outside of the field were the seven guys that we least expected from the soccer team. They were not the guys. Like, some of them we were like, oh, for sure they're going to come and for sure they want to go deeper. And that didn't happen.
What made those guys unexpected?
A lot of it was their behavior. So again, working in the community where we work, it's not uncommon to have guys that come to your practice and they're smoking weed or they're drunk and they're like 13 years old, you know? Wow. And so you look at them and they're like, yeah, they probably have no interest in what we're talking about. But they were always the guys that would ask questions and would always be provocative and always be super like challenging. And at first it feels like, oh, they're pushing us away. But it was actually because they were so interested in it. So they started coming together, and right away, our first thing was like, they already knew who God was. They already knew who they are. And we already went through lifestyles of disciples and different things like that with them. So our first thing was like baptism. Let's talk baptism and what it means. Because again, with a lot of teenagers, what we saw, either you get to baptism really quick and then they drop you and they never talk to you again and they leave you. And that's super, it's even more discouraging, or it's taken years of just like relationship and relationship. And one of our first obstacles in working with the youth was they associated, a lot of them come from a Catholic background. And they associate getting baptized as with perfection. Like, I'm not perfect, therefore I shouldn't get baptized. So that was our first obstacle that we needed to break. And the story of, you know, the eunuch, the story of Cornelius really helped break it down, because it's easy to see Cornelius really first encounter with Peter, maybe not super perfect person, but he's getting baptized. And so out of seven, five said, we're going to get baptized. The next step we've learned is before they get baptized, we have to talk to their parents, because back a couple of years ago, we used to baptize kids and not tell anything to their parents, because anytime we would tell things to the parents, it would be like, okay, no baptisms. No, this is weird. What are you guys doing? And so we would do a couple secret baptisms, but then it would break the whole relationship with the family. And our goal is always to reach families through these players. And so then our next step was, okay, let's invite your parents to your baptism and we will make a celebration out of it. It'll be a party. All five parents were so into it. They were like, we can't believe that, you know, our kids are choosing this, super encouraged, super supportive. And so the hard part though, they did get baptized, but the hard part is them continue to walk in righteousness. Again, we're constantly making 10 steps forward and 50 steps backwards every week. Oh, I understand I'm not supposed to have sex with people in my high school, but next week he's coming back and he's like, oh, I think I might be a dad in a couple months. And then he goes, I can't make a disciple and I can't share the gospel with anybody because I'm still doing what I used to do. It's so bad. It's so hard for them to really walk in righteousness and holiness. But we're seeing that increase and seeing that a lot of them, like some of the guys, for example, have decided that they're not going to smoke weed and have it for a few months. Mm-hmm. But then having them then, okay, I'm going to be sexually pure is completely different. You know, it's like, coach, that's hard for me. I'm going to work on this. And so we're on this journey of walking with them and seeing how we can multiply out with this specific church of seven guys, all from Hispanic background, 18 to 18. They began to share the stories with their parents and began to share the gospel with their parents. And their parents are telling us that they're seeing transformation, and they're seeing the respect is there, and the, you know, that they're not screaming at me anymore and they're not fighting with me anymore, but they're honoring me as their dad, and which is really cool. So that's one of our churches. And again, we're trying to multiply it out, but it's been very challenging because every time we try to do it, they either, I'm still living in sin. I don't want to do this. I need to be 100% perfect. So it's been a challenge walking with these guys now since October. And then there's another group of guys that is, and girls, in the African community, African refugees from Congo, Uganda, and Tanzania. And that was like, the way we entered that community was God. It was literally just God. So we go on prayer walks around our area pretty often, and prayer drives that just became something, a DNA of what we do since like 8-9 years ago. It's just before we do anything in the apartment complex, we decided we're going to walk and pray for it for 8 weeks before we go do any of the work. And so one of our prayer walks, 2 years ago, I was in Africa visiting some guys who are multiplying disciples through sport, play, and fitness. And they taught us this song, and it goes, Mamba Sawa Sawa. It's a pretty famous African song. It means God is in control, God is in the throne. But it became extremely annoying to me because we sang it 30 times a day, like literally. It was just, I kept hearing it in my head nonstop. And so on this prayer walk, I'm hearing the song in this apartment complex. And I'm like, wait, what? How am I going crazy? And so I'm like following the sound as I'm praying. And I go around the corner and there's like six boys, ages 14 through 18. And they're just singing that song. And so I, as a white guy, even though I'm from Uzbekistan, everybody thinks I'm just a white guy, American. I walk up to them and start singing it with them. And their minds just blow up. They're like, "What? Who's this guy? How do you know this song? What are you doing here?" Mm-hmm. And that was like, to me, that was insane because I've never experienced almost that like direction of God of just, this is supernatural, kind of like that in the middle of Houston, we're singing a song that I learned in Africa that they learned at a refugee camp. And so right away, I shared the three circles with them. Most of those guys come out of a Methodist, African Methodist background. So their parents would be in the Methodist church, but the guys don't go to the church at all, like completely anti-religious, especially when they move here to the US. It's kind of the same story as me of like, man, let's get rich, let's get happy, let's have fun. Like this Christianity thing is on the side. So started sharing the gospel with them right away and began Discovery Bible study. We went from creation to Christ first so that they understand the meta narrative of the Bible. And all of them were, again, like for the first time, it felt like they're hearing the creation story. For the first time, it felt like they're hearing the flood story. And they're beginning to understand the heaviness of their sin. Because again, they come from a Christian background, but they think they're perfect. They're like, their theology is let's sin and God will forgive me this morning, like tonight. You know, like, what's the point? And so they begin to really understand that, wow, my sin is heavy. Like my God is holy. And they begin to see that in scripture. And I think the flood story really helped them see that. Like, wow, literally like wiped out the world because of their sinfulness. Like, and I do the same things they're doing. I'm getting drunk. I'm having outside the marriage sex. And so, and for them becoming a house church was pretty easy because they were like, okay, we're in this together. Let's grow together. They begin sharing the gospel with their friends. They begin to see transformation in their school grades because we're trying to see holistic. And out of nowhere, I get a call from their dean at their high school, assistant to the dean of ESL students. And she's like, do you know these Richard, Dennis, Martin? Do you know these guys? I'm like, yeah, yeah. How do you know these guys? And I'm kind of telling them, I don't know, maybe I got in trouble. It was like, okay, well, their behavior has really changed. They're actually trying in school. They're actually supporting their teachers. What do you think if you come back here and do the same thing for the rest of our ESL students? Hmm. We have 500 students and she's a believer, but she is like, she didn't want to expose her beliefs in the public school setting. She said, okay, what do you think about this? You can come and do a pep rally here. You can share the story from the Bible, but don't just say it's from the Bible and see if anybody's interested to meet with you during their lunch hours. You're free to do that. And I was like, yeah, let's do that. So we went and we did the first rally where we played games and stuff. We shared the story of Esther and how Esther, because all of these students are ESL students, so they all just moved here, how Esther is basically also grew up in a very different culture, but God moved her to that culture for a reason and had a purpose for her there, even though it was against her people, it was against her beliefs, but how she was able to change the story of her nation. And so that impacted a lot of the students where we began going there four lunches a week and doing Discovery Bible studies with separate groups of guys and girls all through, well, we had to stop during COVID, but we're coming back there again, which was awesome because they opened that community to us out of nowhere. We didn't have to spend any money. The teachers were based, none of the teachers are believers, but they're like, please do something with our students because we don't know how to work with them, which was great. Like for me, that was, wow. Again, this is not sport related. This has started with a prayer walk and God led us to that. Then they led us to a group of girls in their own community, group of parents in their own community, where we're now hosting a church that's been going on for 2 years, girls ages 12 to 16, super committed, even though again, they're struggling, but they're super committed to walking this out and sharing the gospel with others. And so that's kind of some of the stories we have. A hard thing for us is to get to that second generation. Every time we get to it, they want to come back and hang out all together. They mm-hmm. don't want to separate. So they want to grow in one, like, let's have fun together. Let's all get 50 of us in this apartment and have fun together. So it's always, as soon as we get to that second, they always tend to come back or they just stop what they're doing. And so that's been an obstacle for us, is to really encouraging them. Of course, they're the ones that are helping us lead the DBS groups in their schools, but none of them have self-identified as churches as of right now. So trying to work through that. And with kids and teenagers, we realize what takes like 6 months and a year with an adult takes like 3 to 5 years with a teenager. They're being challenged so much by the social media, by their classmates, by their teachers, by everything around them. And so that's been tough for us.
Right through that. Man, well, I love the insights that I'm hearing, that you guys are faithfully laboring towards the end goal of multiplying, seeing, reproducing churches, but you're learning along the way and you're seeing those challenges. Yeah. A question came to my mind as you were sharing about the group of African guys. It sounds like you took them through the creation of Christ stories. And then you referenced they really didn't have a problem becoming a church. When along the creation of Christ journey did that identification happen?
So after creation to Christ, we basically, that's when we really asked them, do you want to make the decision to follow Jesus or not? Because we used to just not share that and go like, oh, you gave your life to Jesus. Let's do lifestyles of disciples, life habits of disciples and church. But then we saw that a lot of people will fall out because they'll begin reading weird parts of the Bible and they'll be like, well, I didn't read any of this. This is like, this is, well, God kills the people and this and that. And so we ran the 20 passages and that's when we asked them, hey, do you really want to follow Jesus? Do you believe the God of the Bible, not the God that you want to create in your head or the culture creates around you, but the God of the Bible? They said, yes. So the next time we met, we began talking, what does a church look like? And they saw all the 9 characteristics is what we have present in our gatherings, except for really communion. That was the only thing. And for them, they knew communion. And so because their parents would do it at the church, and for them, it was like, okay, let's just do that. Let's add that to our meetings. And we're a church.
So how has that then affected the parents? Any connections there? Have you guys negative or positive? Any stories as it's gone back up a generation?
All the parents visit a traditional church. And so when the guys, 3 of the guys decided to get baptized, our first obstacle was, well, this was weird to me. Literally the parents, we went to talk to the parents and the parents were like, well, are you going to give them a diploma? And I was like, yeah, I guess we can give them a baptism diploma. No problem. Like if that matters, we will do this. And then the second question was, are you going to give them a diploma that has the Methodist Bishop of Africa stamp on it? And that was a little more challenging because I was like, okay, if I have to do this, I'll do it just so that we don't break the relationship with parents. So I emailed the Methodist Church in Africa where they're from. I had no response. I called them and got a little response. And they basically asked, are you ordained as a Methodist, pastor? And I was like, no. And they're like, we can't give you the stamp. And I was like, okay. So they were actually, I said, no problem. You guys can get baptized in your parents' church. For me, that's a win. Like if I'm not the one baptizing you, I really don't care. And so they, 3 of them got baptized at their parents' church. And one of their dads who was on staff of the church, he has his son is 19 years old. And he said for 19 years, I've been trying to reach my son and minister to them and get him to get baptized. And he never was interested in faith. And like, just to see the progress you've made in 6 months, his dad was just crying. Mm. He's like you came and like, you've just changed our boy's life. He said in America, when they moved, it got much worse because he has two sons and both of them are extremely talented. They want to be pop singers. They want to be rappers. And then their Congolese community, they're actually pretty famous. So like they have like 50, 60,000 views on YouTube. And so he was basically like, when they started gaining this fame, it was, I never saw them at home. They were out, they were doing whatever. And here, basically, their lives change. And so they then are the ones. So his parents are like, can you do, they have 13 kids. So they were like, can you do this with our daughters? Can you go through that same process? Because again, our daughters are struggling with the same thing. And so they opened a door and we started a church, a house church with their daughters that is going for 2 years. And their daughters are bringing more people in. And so that's kind of an impact with the parents. And it helps that we live in the community and we support them and pray with them and meet their needs whenever is possible. And so now we're working with them. There's a lot of them are beginning to move to other apartment complexes or other places in the US, Arkansas, and places like that. And we're beginning to work of like, how do you can start the same thing in that new apartment. So I'm hoping to see with the African guys, second generation at a different apartment, because one of the guys just moved there, and working with them to start gathering his friends, starting sharing the gospel with people, praying for people in that apartment complex.
That's great. That's actually what I was going to ask next, is how are they networked? So it sounds like for what you just described, there's obviously, that's a pretty clear second generation. Are there any connections with some of these other groups or churches, or are they just describe anything there?
So all our churches are and groups are connected under what we call our one community. So we're all going and trying to reach youth population of Southwest Houston, specifically immigrant and refugee through playing fitness. So we meet pretty regularly. We'll have celebration events. We're doing spring break event next week together where they can come and have fun and get to know each other and see that they're not alone in this. There are hundreds of other guys and girls who are doing the same process, three-thirds through soccer, through fitness, through crafts and various things like that, that even though we're all passionate about different things, we're still doing the same thing. We're still asking the same questions, but they're not really connected outside of their friend groups. So once they became, this is my friend group, it's hard for them to then go and reach out and see second and third generation. And we've seen it, like we would see third generation of disciples, but never third generation of groups and churches that began. So they'll make a disciple whose disciple made a disciple, but it's extremely hard for them to then just gather. Mm-hmm. They always just want to bring everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's a great challenge and a reminder for me. We often can put just basically the ministry you described, we put that into kind of like, well, it's just a church's outreach, right? But then to see it, it's actually, if we use the four fields paradigm, it's the entry point to still get to get to self-identified church that will continue to reproduce.
Yeah. And that's our goal for this new year, is we want to see actual self-identified church on the soccer field that meets twice a week for practice and play. But then they're like, we're a church right here. We're exhibiting all the characteristics of a healthy church on the soccer field, which is we really want to redeem all the times of patterns of time and passions mm-hmm. that people and see how, what are people doing often where church can be birthed? So if mm-hmm. people are working out five mornings a week, how can a church be birthed right there where they're already doing it 5 days a week with consistency? And so that's where we are right now, seeing that happen this year in the fitness gyms, on the soccer fields.
Yeah, that is a great question. What are people doing often where a church could be birthed? I love that. Tell me, what has God continued to do in your heart over this journey?
what I've seen in young people is when I just share the three circles, a lot of times the heaviness of sin doesn't come across in a lot of ways. And it turns more in their minds into a self-help thing. Like, for me to move into this perfect world, this is great. And so lately been challenged to really speak out on sin in the communities and call out sin together with people that they can call out sin in me when they see it. And they'll call out, for example, as a soccer coach, I'm extremely competitive. So like they'll call out in me, oh, you're getting a little too competitive and want to win over everything and not exhibiting humility in your relationship with other coaches. And so challenging others to really call that out in each other on the field. You know, if somebody says a bad word, we'll call it out. Before that, we kind of just went through like, do 20 pushups if you say a bad word. That's what we used to do. But now it's like, well, you've said a bad word. First of all, you've disrespected a human being, somebody who you directed. That's a sin. You've disrespected God. That's a sin. You've polluted your mind. So yeah, that's kind of been my walk as well this year. And trying to build more and more relationships with the parents. That's been our obstacle. Most parents just see as somebody who works with their kids and put that wall of like, you're a babysitter, basically.
What would you say is the challenge living in a place where nominal Christianity is accepted versus being someplace where outright persecution, I mean, getting kicked out of a country or could have been worse, it sounds like. So what would you, if there's any way to kind of summarize that difference or that challenge there?
The nominal Christianity here is so hard to overcome. I mean, the question I ask myself all the time, there's 1 million churchgoers in Houston, people who say that they go to church. There's 1 million of them, which is insane. 3,000 churches in the Houston, greater Houston area, but the city's completely unreached. Like, and why is that? Why is so many people go to church, but yet there's no reason why in the next 3 years, Houston shouldn't be reached. Like in the next 5 years, Houston should be the place that can say there's no place left. And so that's been my like question of I know parts of the world where villages and cities are being reached. And I think a big part is comfort. We've made Christianity just a comfort of our culture. This is something that I do to feel comfortable about who I am. This is something that I do to maybe get happiness and peace and joy. And these are all byproducts of Christianity and a relationship with God, but it turned into all of like, what can I get for myself out of Christianity? And as soon as I stop getting something out of it, it's no longer relevant for me. And I see people just being in the comfort zone. I'm a part of a few groups where the majority of them are believers. And what I see a lot of times, it's like, you know, I feel like I don't need to share the gospel because my life is the gospel. And so if people see something in me and they ask the question, that's great. Well, usually that nobody will ask you any questions. So I see comfort as just being a huge obstacle in that of, I feel really comfortable in my faith and I feel like I'm not supposed to be challenged in my obedience and in my walk with Christ because Christianity is not a religion and it's a relationship and it's not about legalism, you know? And as soon as you bring the question of obedience into the American Christian world, it's right away of like, no, we got to preach grace. Why are you telling me I should obey something? No, I really just want it to take root in my heart, but not in my everyday. This paradox, I guess. And then people just love consumerism in the US. And that's just not just Christianity. That's everywhere. The secular culture has infiltrated the Christian world here. That people choose the church that does have the best worship. People choose the church that has the best childcare, a church that doesn't challenge them. And I think with COVID now, people are choosing the church that has the best online service so that they don't even have to leave their house, which it really breaks my heart because I see so much potential in the young people in Houston. And if we just share the gospel with one person a year, I'm not even saying share it with one person a week, just one person a year. If all of us, 100,000 or whatever young adults in Houston who are believers would just share with one, we would see huge progress in 5-7 years. And another challenge that I see as I try to multiply simple churches is that a lot of times once we get to the third generation of disciples, they see a church building and they became believers. That's where they're going to go. Or they'll Google, like one of the biggest enemies of, I feel like, church disciple making here is Google and technology. Because anytime you begin reading the Word of God with anybody, they'll go back home and they'll Google it. You know, they'll Google that passage that we read, and then they'll get a bunch of weird analysis and commentary on that passage. And then they'll come back and they'll say, oh, none of that is actually true. This is parable or an allegory. And so that's been a huge challenge for us. And even people like Googling worship songs on YouTube, and what do they see? They see a mega church with an awesome band. And then they're like, this is where I'm going to go. Where can I find that? And so we started, like, we used to do worship through YouTube and stuff like that. And we stopped that because we saw that it creates a thought process in people's mind. It's like, where can I find this worship? So we do a cappella stuff now.
That's a challenge for me, man, with the home gathering I have. I appreciate that. Is there anything else either that I missed in a question or anything else on your heart that you would like to share?
Keep asking the question of how can we reach every place, every fashion, every people group, every place. And I think we will do it. I have faith in that. That for Houston, I told some of the guys here with whom we're laboring that, let's say in 5 years, we all need to move out of Houston because every place has reached in Houston. Let's put that as our prayer focus and goal. We have everything in Houston. There is, it's like a perfect equation to have no place left. And so that's been my prayer of just like, God, I want to see no place left 5 years, 2025. Just, it goes beyond us, beyond our group.
To connect with Roman, leave a comment, or to ask a question, you can head to ontheroad.link. That's ontheroad.link. You can also call or text 321-209-3899. This is Feeney. Thanks for listening. The On the Road podcast is to encourage you to share the gospel, make disciples, and reproduce leaders in churches until there is no place left where the name of Jesus hasn't been heard.